Hello, dear listeners. I'm Trayvon Collins, a senior mechanical engineering major at Tennessee Technological University. If you're interested in emerging STEM technologies, then you've come to the right place. Now, get ready as we explore how an everyday phenomenon is making waves in the research and development space.
When you think about bubbles, what's the first image that comes to mind? Perhaps it's soap suds flying everywhere while you wash dishes in the sink following a family meal. Or maybe it's the carbonation that you see upon cracking open a cool soda on a sweltering summer day. You might even recall a fond childhood memory of yourself with a small plastic bottle in one hand and a bubble blower in the other, chasing dozens of fun little spheres across a field. If you were quick enough, you might have been able to poke one of those bluish orbs and hear a satisfying pop. For many, this is the extent of the acknowledgement given to our frothy friends. Within the research community, however, the intrigue goes much deeper. In fact, bursting bubbles serves as a vehicle for advancing interfacial dynamics, the study of the behavior and properties of interfaces between different phases of matter. For instance, consider the boundary between your windshield and a droplet of rain, or between a droplet of rain and the air. These are examples of solid-liquid and liquid-vapor interfaces, each of which are important for processes like adsorption, the formation of films on surfaces, and humidification, the increase of air moisture content, respectively. To the uninitiated, this may seem like a trivial field, but here at the University of Cincinnati, there's an entire lab dedicated to it. Over the past few months that I've had the fortune to contribute as a visiting member, I've worked on a project with far-reaching implications for our understanding of phase change, mass transfer, and heat transfer at small scales. For biomedical applications, this means doctors could better diagnose and monitor the progression of conditions like anhidrosis, which is the inability to sweat. Likewise, in the atmospheric sciences, this could help everything from improving the accuracy of your morning weather forecast to analyzing how climate patterns evolve due to global warming. But speaking of quite literally hot topics, there's also the elephant in the room: data centers. Your first thought is likely the unprecedented strain on global resources due to the rise of AI, but that's not the entire picture. Even the neighborhood watch parties streaming the World Cup have a hand in this. With servers producing more heat every day, research like mine is foundational to the identification of next-generation cooling solutions. So what, might you ask, has this oh-so-consequential endeavor entailed? Succinctly put, I've been writing a code for analyzing simulated path data of dots representing atoms moving through a rectangular duct. If you find that surprisingly straightforward, then you can imagine how I felt in May when one of my lab members first presented this to me as one of the options for my summer research. With fluid mechanics and heat transfer fresh in my mind thanks to my spring coursework at Tennessee Tech, I jumped at the opportunity, figuring that my qualifications would maximize the tractability of the task. Immediately, my mind went to the ideal gas law, Reynolds transport theorem, which essentially converts a motion-driven frame of reference into a fixed volume interpretation for applying conservation principles, and other tools I'd learned over the past 3 years of undergrad. Granted, I need more information to get started. Naturally, my PhD student mentor elaborated, detailing that those atoms I'd be simulating were argon particles moving through a nanochannel, a small conduit for fluid flow made of walls of platinum, a material selected for its non-reactivity that will be subjected to varying levels of non-uniform temperature. Supposedly, this would allow us to numerically relate changes in the time distribution of phase change events like evaporation and condensation with fluctuations in mass flux rates and probabilities of atoms in one phase becoming stuck in another. Oh, and those items in that toolbox I mentioned earlier? None of them would be useful. Perhaps amused by my dumbfounded expression at hearing this news, my mentor laughed and further explained that the ideal gas law, along with several other chemistry and thermodynamic concepts I'd encountered up to that point, fell under the umbrella of the kinetic theory of gases, which begins to break down under the non-equilibrium conditions we'd be testing. Likewise, Reynolds was out the window because we weren't dealing with continuum mechanics, we were counting atoms. So instead, I learned the basics of LAMMPS, software for something we call MD. That stands for Molecular Dynamics, a computer-based method for deriving the kinetic and thermodynamic properties of atoms and molecules from equations of motion over time. I also explored techniques in the MATLAB programming language for data parallelization, a computing strategy for chunking large data sets into multiple concurrent operations. As I'd be post-processing thousands, and eventually hundreds of thousands of atoms, use of the campus supercomputer was also on the table. This brings us back to the data center issue. More computation means more heat. While it may seem counterintuitive to fight fire with fire, the constraints of our study, along with one of the broader aims regarding thermal management effectivization, make this a necessary evil. After all, it isn't exactly a walk in the park to do physical experiments with atoms.
On the other hand, it's easy, or at least easier, to model the atom trajectories with MD. Think of the motion of pool balls after a break. The collisions follow Newton's laws. As they travel across the table, or across the nanochannel as it were, we can classify liquid or vapor regions based on how our atomic billiards group together or spread out. As such, each individual ball is agnostic to its quote-unquote phase in a given moment of time. Rather, it is through compiling a series of snapshots of each path that we can begin to understand the underlying mechanisms of interfacial transfer. Make no mistake though, the evolution of said paths is very much governed by intricate thermofluids principles, so it is critical that we account for these complexities.
Given the stakes, you might suspect I was overwhelmed, but I was essentially crunching numbers. The harder part of devising a new theory for approaching the findings had already been done by the principal investigator, or PI. That's the boss of the lab. And no, he's not a gray-haired maniac who spends all day polishing test tubes. On the contrary, he's a respected tenured professor who spends most of his time during the summer traveling to various conferences and events across the country, engaging in academic discourse and technical workshops among other experts. When he is in town, or at the very least available to meet online, he's brainstorming ideas for new projects, drafting grant proposals, ordering new lab equipment, attending his students' dissertation defenses, and supervising progress towards overarching deliverables. During our weekly, mostly virtual meetings, he was an indispensable resource for course correcting, offering thoughtful advice on building workflows that foster deep learning while maintaining a reasonable project timeline. For a time, this assuaged my fears of reaching an impasse, but it also obfuscated the point that he and my PhD student mentor were trying to convey. Research isn't about cycling through an inventory of apparatuses or algorithms until you find something that plays nice with the model. Rather, it's about taking incremental steps towards a level of mastery that effectively raises the bar of innovation in one's domain. I'd like to say that epiphany struck me and made troubleshooting a conundrum, such as the point in my investigation where I had to determine the ideal plane boundaries for a mathematically infinite liquid vapor interface. Unfortunately, that couldn't be farther from the truth. Rather, it was after 4 hours of restaurant hopping at 11 p.m. on a Friday night when my mentor and I were discussing our research experience with the Cincinnati local outside of a bar. It's like looking over your shoulder while walking on a beach. You don't realize how far you've come until you see your footprint in the sand. Of course, that begs the question of where exactly we've arrived. Well, after weeks of churning out histograms and Excel spreadsheets, I can attest to major progress towards a comprehensive empirical correlation of temperature gradients with phase change variation. Sure, there's a lot more work to be done, but then again, there's no real finish line when it comes to science, especially when bridging the gap between the known and the unknown. There's no guarantee that we'll obtain immediately useful results, nor that we can reliably claim what those results would even look like. And that's kind of the point. Research wouldn't be worth conducting, or at the very least intellectually stimulating, if it was predictable. It is only when we embrace the possibility of the implausible that we can realize our full problem-solving potential. So the next time you bemoan the ever-growing size of dilemmas like the AI bubble, keep in mind that it may very well be a literal bubble that serves as the key to a cooler future for us all.